This is Rhode Island Public Radio, Rhode Island's NPR. And for Elizabeth Harrison, I'm Chuck Hinman in Providence. Air quality here is expected to reach unhealthy levels again in all of Rhode Island today, and that means free bus service on all RIPTA vehicles except for special services. Forecasters say this heat will be with us for at least another day into Saturday, possibly easing by Sunday. State Department of Environmental Management says the poor air quality is due to elevated ground-level ozone concentrations. Ozone is a major component of smog and can cause throat irritation, chest pain, and respiratory problems. Rhode Island's unemployment rate was unchanged from May to June. The rate held steady at 8.9%, but as Rhode Island Public Radio's Flo Jonick reports, the monthly jobless report also contained some bright spots.
Job growth was reported in most employment sectors in June, according to the State Department of Labor and Training. Growth was most notable in the professional and business services category, which grew by 1,700 jobs. Educational services were up by 500 due to earlier-than-expected seasonal job losses the previous month. Gains were also reported in construction, financial services, transportation, warehousing, healthcare, and social assistance. Job losses were reported in accommodation, food services, and retail. Overall, Rhode Island's 8.9% jobless rate means that close to 50,000 people are still looking for work. That's down about 10,000 over the past year. Flo Jonick, Rhode Island Public Radio.
A former top prison guard at the ACI has been sentenced to 18 months behind bars for assaulting inmates. The guard, Galtar Bodas, was convicted in 2008, along with another guard, Kenneth Viveros, of assault and battery for attacking four inmates back in 2005 and 2006. The Providence Journal reports that the 44-year-old Johnston resident apologized in court yesterday during his sentencing hearing, saying he looks back at that time and wonders who that person was. A new collaboration to research and treat autism is coming to Rhode Island. The Rhode Island Consortium for Autism Research and Treatment, or RICART, brings doctors, researchers, and educators together to advance autism research and put a spotlight on the disorder. RICART co-director Stephen Scheinkopf says they're asking families grappling with autism to join a registry that will give researchers access to possible volunteers and families access to information.
Resources have information about their child, updated assessment, and in the long run, access to treatment trials as we develop those.
RICART is also looking at the primary care needs of autistic patients. More information on this can be found at autismri.org. In sports, the All-Star break ends today, and the Red Sox start the second half of the season by hosting the Yankees, who come into Fenway tonight 6 games behind the AL East-leading Boston Red Sox. The Paw Sox beat Durham on the road last night 4-3. They will play again tonight.
Thank you. Joining us as usual is University of Rhode Island political science professor Maureen Moakley. Good morning, Maureen.
Good morning, everyone.
And Rhode Island Public Radio political analyst Scott McKay. Hi, Scott.
Good morning, Rhode Island.
Our special guest today is Rhode Island Speaker of the House of Representatives Gordon Fox, who I take it is rested up after that exhaustive legislative session, which didn't end until practically the 4th of July.
July 3rd. Good morning, everyone.
Good morning. Gordon, we'll start out with an easy one. Which do you consider your greatest triumph and greatest disappointment from this recently completed legislative session?
Greatest triumph, I think, clearly, passage of marriage equality. And, I mean, to be able to be part of making history doesn't happen very much as a lawmaker. And I've been in 21 years, but it's one of those historic moments. And on a personal, not only from a personal note of my 15-year relationship with my partner, but on a personal note of having been the majority leader and then settling for the civil unions. I mean, on a personal note where, I mean, over the past few years, it didn't feel right. It didn't feel like we had done what we needed to do. So from my position of being the speaker in one of those rare occasions where you can deliver something historic in terms of legislation that speaks of love and equality and togetherness and community was phenomenal.
And the biggest disappointment?
Disappointment, I think every session, I try not to call them disappointments, but there's what we weren't able to accomplish. I mean, clearly, we ended on some sour notes in terms of the Sakonnet Bridge. Still trying to work out the ramifications of paying or not paying the bonds back for the 38 studios. So I put those in sort of the disappointment that we've sort of, but we're working on those. So it's not really disappointment, but sort of we didn't get it done yet, but we will, and trying to get it right.
What do you think the prospects are for the lawsuit that Governor Chafee has Max Wistow pursuing? I look at some of these firms like Wells Fargo. They've paid out millions and millions and millions of dollars to other states for various forms of financial chicanery.
We're talking about the 38 Studios lawsuit.
Right.
That's correct.
And I don't know the details, Scott, but obviously you know that, and that was one of the debates we were having. Obviously, that was a really raucous debate in terms of the budget, making the payment. We did put that we have allocated the money. The payments that technically due, the first installment, is due next year, sometime around March or May. But we did put $50,000 to really look at the study and the ramifications. This is going to be something that is going to go on in terms of the terms of every annual. So the only thing I can say, but I don't know the lawsuit, but obviously anything they collect there would go to offset some of those the obligations to the state, and that would be a good thing.
You know, you were talking about the fact that it was raucous, and the end of the session always is raucous, but did you get the sense that the troops are a little more restive this time, given the Sakonnet Bridge and everything like that, that it was much more difficult to try to hold them together?
Well, to hold them together, it was a strange year. And, you know, we've come in terms of the big issues. That's all a relative term in terms of pension reform and whatnot. We've dealt with some big issues, and we've been sort of running continuously in elections and off-year session to do pension. So I think people came in a little tired and a little war-weary to begin with. But then you had these issues like the tolls, for instance, that it seems like normally, and I'm a consensus builder, I try to be a moderate in my way of thinking. Most issues you can somehow reach consensus, reach a middle. There seem to be issues like the tolls. Fire districts this year, of all things. I was called into a meeting on the Central Coventry Fire District. Then we end up in a heated battle over the merger of the Cumberland Fire Districts. Things that you would think are local, not particular to the statewide, that turned into you're on one side or the other side, and the nerves got raw and frayed. I don't like to end on a solid note. I don't like to end on people feeling somehow they were mistreated or misled or misguided or lied to. But there are issues like that. For whatever reason, I don't know what it is, that are raw and cause some real contrary kind of opinions.
Governor Chafee has recently vetoed a bill that would have authorized the issuance of a Choose Life license plate. Some of the proceeds from the sale of this plate would have gone to a group that opposes abortion, a Christian group. Is there any interest in the House to overriding this veto?
That bill came to the floor. I did not vote for that bill. That vetoes are too soon to talk about what is on the table to do a potential override or not. I personally would not advocate for an override of that bill. I mean, if you remember, the original notion of that bill was for the proceeds to go to the Knights of Columbus. And in fact, two things that came up in the advocates on the other side against the bill made the point it's an all-male organization. And quite frankly, they were an organization that were not very helpful in the marriage equality. So I thought it was inappropriate. There was a change made to this other organization, seems to be religious based.
Why did the leadership?
Chairman Cavese wanted that bill passed, so it was like, he has a right to have it, come to the floor, see what happens. I didn't vote for it. I wasn't really settled on where the money was going to. One thing I put out there is if you need the plate, why don't you put it into Adoption Rhode Island, which has a history of dealing with Planned Parenthood and really looking at the adoption issues. That didn't fly with certain people that were sponsors of it. So it is what it is, but at this point, I wouldn't be advocating for an override.
Well, is the governor going to take the heat for this now? In other words, it's kind of like you kicked it upstairs, because he's now vetoed it, and that's probably going to be the end of it.
Welcome
so you let it go and he took the heat.
And welcome to public life. I mean, we all take heat on different issues. And the governor, who I know is a strong pro-choice advocate, as I am, made a decision in his role, his executive role. And I'm sure he's strong enough to take any heat. But I'm sure he's also garnered a lot of goodwill from the advocates against that plate. So politically, it's probably a wash for him.
Some in the business community, Mr. Speaker, were upset that the Assembly approved and Governor Chafee signed into law the measure that gives child care workers the right to unionize. As you know, Governor Carcieri vetoed a very similar bill back in 2005, I believe. What's going to be the impact on taxpayers of this legislation given Rhode Island's precarious budget outlook?
Well, I don't think when they look at the impact of taxpayers, you mean, I'm trying to figure out what they mean exactly by that. I guess they figure that somehow if these mostly women come together and join a union, then they're going to advocate for better rates of reimbursement from the state.
That's correct.
Is that a bad thing? I mean, here people are, and they look at both extremes of life. The most vulnerable people in our society are our children and our elderly. And when you look at direct care workers on both those entities, they're the lowest paid people going. And we're asking them to take care of our most precious commodities. So here you have, again, mostly women are in business coming together to say, let's advocate, allow us to unionize so that we can deal with better training, better development, and yes, maybe better reimbursement rates. Why is that a bad thing? We know that daycare leads to better workers, the workers that have the peace of mind knowing that their child is safe and in a protective environment. They're more likely to show up on work. They're more likely to be productive. I think in the long run, this helps productively. It helps business while supporting a group of people that are caring for our children.
I think the concern, though, is that the state is involved. In other words, they are becoming almost de facto state workers.
Well, the legislation says they're not state workers. They're
right
not going to be eligible for pensions. They're not going to be. If at some point that changes, then it'll be a future General Assembly that has to open that door. So I'm comfortable with it, the fact that the right to advocate, to join together to advocate for better training, better working conditions, that's a fundamental notion in America.
But the point is that, you know, we're trying to privatize. And here what you're doing is you're bringing in a different group of people and they're going in a different direction.
That's, I mean, and some people state that as their case, and I believe differently, and so be it. I think the governor signing that, I'm proud that he signed the bill. I'm proud of the men and women of the General Assembly that support and pass the bill. And I think it will long-term lead to dividends in terms of economic and better developed children who will enter the school systems better prepared to learn.
What are we going to do about this toll situation? It seems to me that the East Bay lawmakers were, of course, vehemently against the tolls. But is it really fair to ask the taxpayers from, say, Burrville or Woonsocket, who may rarely or never use this bridge, to pay for it? On a philosophical level, should major infrastructure projects in Rhode Island be financed by the users who use those projects, or by all of us as state taxpayers?
Therein lies the question, Scott. You have said exactly why, when people look at like back and forth on this and looking for some way chicanery or bait and switch, that's not the case. This is one of those conversations that we're going to have. First and foremost, transportation, I think everyone accepts, is a fundamental part of the environment of a state, the business climate of a state, and we have to figure out what's the best way to pay for these. You have bridges that are over salt water that, because of the conditions, they erode more quickly.
Right.
You do have the whole idea of justice in this, and we had a lot of people over the bridge saying, well, it's a statewide structure. Why should we then be covering the costs when you're living in Tiverton, Little Compton, or on the island? You hit the nail on the head. So is it any more fair? And I've got Mount Hope in my district. I've got people that are having trouble paying for milk that will never go over the Saconnet Bridge, don't know where it is. Why should they then pay for it? As you know, there was one proposal from Senator DePalma talking about doubling some of the car inspection fees. That's, of course, borne by everyone. But there is embedded in that in the notion that at some point these are statewide assets. Is there a better way to do it? And I think that's why the approach of putting a group together to look at this off session and figure out what is the best way to fund these. Tolls have been a part of life through every other state. I mean, what is the depth of the toll? If there's a toll, how much should the toll be? All those questions. We kept getting information back and forth. Ultimately, and I'm no construction expert or engineer, leading to substantial completion dates.
We've been talking this morning to Rhode Island Speaker of the House, Gordon Fox. Gordon, thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me.
And thanks to you, Scott and Maureen.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We're funded by you, our listeners, and by the Robertson Foundation, continuing the commitment of its founder, Stephen Hamblett, to honest government in Rhode Island through in-depth political coverage.